Good afternoon, members. We'll start today's meeting of the Xbox 360 Modern Warfare 3 tournament. Good afternoon, members. And we're starting off with a presentation today on technology. So if you'd please introduce yourself and please begin with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Scott Thompson. I'm the education strategist for Microsoft Corporation. And with me today is Kelly Siebold, who is our education account manager for the state. And we're excited today to be able to share with you the innovations that we're seeing in being able to allow students to reach their full potential. Today we're going to be sharing with you not only the innovations that we're driving through immersive learning, but also around the capabilities that we're providing educators to improve their learning capabilities, to be able to develop a very rich workforce in the STEM areas, and to be able to democratize technology and technology access to all students throughout the state. Within your packets that we have provided the committee, on the left-hand side of the blue packet, we have an overview of the Microsoft Partners in Learning Program, which is a group of individuals who are absolutely committed to making sure that students are able to reach their full potential. These individuals inside of Microsoft are especially focused on innovative teaching practices, being able to provide education staff development to educators at no cost, and to also provide innovative tools to teachers so that they can use them as accelerants for learning. Also in the packet is something called Shape the Future, which is a program that we have developed at Microsoft in conjunction with Comcast to provide information and communication technology access to students in areas that would otherwise not be able to afford or have access to that technology. And finally, on the left-hand side at the very back of the packet is a piece of content around Microsoft's IT Academy, an academy which provides the ability of every student walking across the graduation stage with not only a college with a high school diploma, but also an industry recognized certification. The IT Academy program is a program that we have been offering statewide and has had tremendous results in other states. Finally, we have on the right-hand side of the blue packet an overview of immersive learning. And specifically today, what we have done is brought with us one of the devices that we're seeing that are being used as an accelerant for learning in the classroom. It's important, I think, to bring awareness to the fact that the way that students are learning today is fundamentally different than many of us experienced as we were going through school. And indeed, we have technologies today that are able to not only engage students and allow them to relentlessly pursue learning in a very safe way, but also having fun while they're learning and being able to not only engage cognitive function, but also gross motor skill function. We mentioned that we have Kelly Siebold here, and Kelly is going to take a few moments, if it is okay with the chairman, if we may, to demonstrate the technology. And did you need an assistant? Okay. Are we doing this on your own?
Hi, welcome to the committee.
And this is Kelly Siebold.
And Dwayne, Representative Kwan, you might want to move around to the other side because I don't know if the Kinect is actually going to pick up your movement as a second player. I don't know, maybe Kelly does.
I'm not sure if I'm
going to
go
on.
So the game that I will be demonstrating is Your Shape 2012. It's used primarily in a physical education environment. We do have academic titles also. This one is focusing on gross motor skills, coordination, in a jump rope setting. It's a single player game. There are multiple player instances. Well,
one of the key differentiating pieces of innovation that we've driven here is the ability to allow the student to become the controller. And so the only devices that are required in addition to the two pieces of equipment we have connected into the display are the student and some room.
to do this for the next 60 minutes.
In addition to working with, thank you, Kelly. In addition to working with traditional students, we've also started working with students with special needs and learning differences, specifically around autism. And the work that we've been doing, I'm sorry.
Please do that again. I think the photographer was trying to get a picture of you doing that. So, did we get one or not? We can do more. Sorry. It's all about good government, you know. So.
Tom, you have to move again.
Not if I don't move. My son has this.
Yep, you stay still, you'll be okay. Okay. And what's the name of this game?
Your Shape 2012.
Your Shape 2012. But also, Mr. Chairman, we're working with students with special needs and have found that, especially around the area of autism, having high levels of engagement with those students. And so we've actually been working with research universities. Microsoft Research is also investing in the research and development of content specifically geared in not only just education, but also helping students with challenges around learning.
Thank you. Is that the completion of your presentation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'll move to questions from members of the committee on the technology. Representative Kwan.
Can the committee utilize this equipment for the next few weeks to further understand it?
I don't think so, Representative Kwan. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you say a little bit more about the use of this with children in the autism spectrum and its availability to schools in Minnesota?
Yes, ma'am.
The testimony.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I appreciate the question. The technology is running on Xbox and Kinect. The Kinect is the device at the top, which is a sensor that has not only thermal imaging but also video imaging. And that technology can be purchased at most retailers that would provide electronics. So they're fairly ubiquitous and available to educators for purchase. Typically, the cost of these devices is under $300. And what we've seen in the instructional setting is that because this is not the class, this is a supplemental activity to the class, that they will, the teachers will put these devices on carts, and they can go from classroom to classroom to make the most of the purchase. Specifically with working with students with autism, one of the discoveries that we had was around Lakeside Academy, which has provided an Xbox and Kinect. They started using it with their students, and they found that students were starting to react to the Xbox and Kinect in very positive ways. Specifically, autism challenges students with gross motor skill function, and they are using the Kinect to help improve that aspect of that student's impacted learning. Mm-hmm. Also around attention. We had some students earlier from Bloomington Public School, Kennedy High School specifically, and these students had developmental disabilities. And it's very stunning to watch students who have challenges around focus, and when they get in front of the Kinect, they're suddenly engaged in new ways. We haven't fully understood why this is happening, and in fact, there's research ongoing around this particular topic.
Representative Briner? Okay. Any additional questions for members of the committee? Any closing comments from the testifiers?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We appreciate the opportunity to be before the committee and share this new innovative way of learning and also the other activities that Microsoft's being able to bring to the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, so in a previous meeting, the testifiers were talking a little smack about we could run the 100-yard dash a little bit faster on the Kinect. So I just so happened to have brought my tennis shoes to the committee today. But I, where did she go? Okay. But I, in fairness, and I see that We joked about this before, but maybe you may not want to do it because you're, I mean, you're wearing a skirt.
Mr. Chairman, I've been briefed by my colleague that she's fully ready to engage with the with the chair.
Okay, all right. So, if you want to go ahead and set that up? Chair here is gonna.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Fig.
I brought my starter's pistol along too. You know, I'm a former track coach. So.
I know. I got my Skechers here, so everyone knows I run.
Mr. Chair, that's cheating. I'm not wearing.
And the winner of this match will take on Representative Ward.
I'm just thinking the same thing, Mr. Chair.
Can you set up two players while I'm getting ready?
Yes, absolutely.
And while we're getting this set up, I do think it's important. We've had previous testimony talking about the importance of physical activity on the brain and how children who are active or who are physically active are actually learning more. So
yes.
As fun as this is from a biology standpoint, it's fun, but it encourages more learning from the student.
It does, and in fact, we're seeing school districts use Connect not only for mathematic remediation and support, but also around supporting special education activities, which is a special concern with students who have the obesity challenges around students.
Ice packs and oxygen. That's right.
Let's make it a mile.
Make it a mile.
I'm not up for a mile, are you?
No, we'll just do the 100.
Yes, we're going to race.
You hook it up to the TV so everyone can see it in real time, huh?
We attempted that, and unfortunately, we don't have the right cable to do that. That was our first topic.
It's awkward standing in front of a crowd silent, isn't it?
There we go. Oh.
Each other because you want more guests.
There.
looking forward to running.
I know. I can do it later.
I said, if you want to get it set up, we can just go.
Okay.
Well,
you can take one of the other members of the committee while we proceed with the business.
Mr. Chairman, we also invite the committee to visit us down in the Capitol, in the hall where we are set up and have the Xbox available for.
Down in the Great Hall in the lower level of the Capitol.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Now,
Chairman.
Keep working on it, Kelly. You can get it set up. It's all right.
Yeah. So,
thank you, members.
Thank you very much for this presentation. Representative Barrett, House File 2540. And the chair will move House File 2540. Be recommended for, be laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. We'll just bring it up to my office and we'll. Welcome to the committee, Representative Barrett. Do you please begin with your presentation and any testifiers you may have?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Representative Bob Barrett, I represent the folks in Chisago County, including the school districts of North Branch, Rush City, and Chisago Lakes, and then part of the Forest Lake School District. Mr. Chair, if I may, this is much more powerful than what I have at home, my Wii, but I actually cringed when I saw it because when I play golf on my Wii at home, it actually knows my slice to a T, and I actually do on the golf course. It's pretty scary what computers can do. But I'm here to talk about a different way to fund education as it relates to the lowest funded districts in our state. As we all know, the education funding formulas in Minnesota have been compiled over many years, starting with a per pupil formula and then a lot of categorical formulas as well. So we have a situation now where we have some districts who are funded at a much greater rate than others. And so I happen to represent three districts that are very, very low funded. And so the bill you have before you, and I appreciate, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your help in creating this bill and also the help of staff, House Research, that helped create a concept that allowed for the concept of disparity aid as we use disparity in other areas of government. What this bill would do is it would bring those districts who are funded at a rate lower than 87% of average, and it would bring those districts up to 87% of average. So it wouldn't fully fund them equal with all other districts in the state, but it would bring them more money that they can use to help educate their kids. And so that's the nature of the bill. It would obviously give some folks a lot more money to be used. Representative Erickson, for example, and you represent Foley and Mille Lacs, I believe, and you would get about $250,000 because it would bring Foley and Mille Lacs up to 87% of average. You are well below that now, and that would give your district a little bit more. Representative Ward and Pequot Lakes, it would provide $800,000 in extra funding for your district. And Representative Quam, it would give Byron School District about $880,000 more. The funding source, well, it would cost about $29 million. So this is not money we have readily available today, but we may have that tomorrow. And if we do, then I'd like to offer this as an idea for funding those districts who are less funded than they should be. Mr. Chair, if I could, I have a couple people here today that would like to testify. And we also have a member of the North Branch School Board, Randy Westby, here, who could answer some questions if you had any, particularly about North Branch School District. Otherwise, I have Dr. Deb Henton, okay. Superintendent of North Branch, unless at your will.
Let's have those testifiers come down right now.
Very good.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Dr. Deb Henton, Superintendent at North Branch Area Public Schools. I am very grateful for the opportunity to testify before you today about House File 2540. I would also like to take this opportunity to thank Representative Barrett, Representative Garofalo, this committee, and the legislature as a whole for providing school districts with an additional $50 per pupil this year and next. North Branch Area Public Schools enrolls 3,143 students K-12 in the Chisago County and Isani County area. Our most recent levy attempt failed this November and marks the eighth consecutive such failure since 1998. We were recently referred to in the Star and Tribune as the unluckiest school district in the state. Our budget woes have been featured in the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, and on CNN. Our inability to pass an operating levy is a primary reason we are one of the lowest funded school districts in the state. The state funding formula, and specifically an equalization factor that has remained unchanged in almost 20 years, is a primary reason we are unable to pass a levy. In 1994, when the equalization factor was put in place, it was designed to give school districts across the state an equal playing field with the wealthiest districts. It allowed for property-poor districts to receive equalization aid on a sliding scale if the school district had a market value per pupil unit below $476,000. According to the Minnesota Department of Education, records indicate that in 1997, two school districts out of 358 were above that figure, and the average market value per pupil unit was $175,000. Over the succeeding years, property values skyrocketed, and the average market value per pupil unit is projected to be $469,000 in 2013. Increasing property values, however, do not equate to an increase in wealth. It does equate to an increase in taxes, though, and Chisago County, which makes up the bulk of our school district, has one of the highest median property tax rates, not just in the state, but in the entire nation. While property values and tax burdens have steadily increased, the state's equalization factor has remained unchanged since its inception and no longer reflects a figure designed to keep property-poor districts on a level playing field with property-wealthy districts. In 2013, 69 school districts will have a market value per pupil above $476,000. And though the majority of districts still remain under that figure, the average dictates that less fortunate school districts qualify for less state aid than ever before, making the challenge of offering students the same advantages as wealthy districts all but impossible. In real terms, based on levying the maximum of $1,600 in $1,605 per pupil, it would cost North Branch residents $407 per 100,000 of property value, while the same levy would cost Orono residents $125. Imagine, if you will, that school funding is like buying gas. When North Branch pulls into the station, it is instructed to use pumps at which the price is $4.07 a gallon. When Orono pulls into the same station for the same gas, it is allowed to pay $1.25 a gallon. Any fair-minded person would agree that the situation as it stands is inherently unfair for school districts and, far more importantly, for students. The result for a school district like North Branch Area Public Schools has been nothing short of devastating. Since the 2003-2004 school year, we have cut $14 million in staff and programs, with millions more expected each year into the foreseeable future. Fees to parents have been increased. Supply lists have grown. Class sizes have increased. Leadership and oversight decimated. Buildings closed. Buildings demolished. The school week reduced. Extracurricular activities slashed and programs eliminated. In the last 4 years, we have cut 89 full-time equivalent positions, and despite declines in enrollment, we have fewer staff serving more students than ever before. Those job losses have also contributed to an overall decline in the local economy. The constant drumbeat of lost opportunities has exacerbated enrollment declines, further exacerbating our funding issues, and a funding system so complex only a few, very few understand, has frustrated our public to the point of causing an almost complete breakdown in the relationship between school district and community. The situation here can only be described as toxic, and at the root of that toxicity lies inequitable funding. Despite our great and numerous challenges, North Branch Area Public Schools has done remarkably well at continuing to provide a competitive education. However, that cannot continue into the future without significant change to the way schools are funded in the near future. Each year we have to look our residents in the eye and tell them that circumstances are such that their children's educations remain underfunded. We tell them that the situation cannot continue much longer. The state must correct the problem. We have been saying that now since the 2003-2004 school year. It has been almost a decade of waiting and watching an entire generation of students and families stuck between a rock and a hard place, hoping for change. We appreciate so much what you do for the children of the state. It is our sincerest hope that we can work together in these challenging times to create an equitable funding structure that acknowledges all kids deserve the same opportunity for a high-quality public education. Give us the chance at a level playing field that only a bill like House File 2540 can provide. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Superintendent.
You're welcome.
Representative Barrett, do you have any additional testifiers?
I do, Mr. Chair. Brad Lundell, from Executive Director from C.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. I did prepare a handout today that it's based on just to show where the rankings are in general ed revenue for all the state. I do this every year, and this is for 2011-2012. The print's a little small, and so for those who need this, I did bring this along. So, but generally what I'm trying to show with this is the C districts are in bold, and we are districts that are heavily dependent on the basic formula for our revenue. The categoricals tend to not work for us, and also we have very low referendum revenue per pupil as well. And Representative Barrett, I really want to thank him for coming forward with this bill, because it does recognize districts like North Branch, Mora, Rush City, Sauk Rapids, Rice, Sartell, districts with low referenda that also do not generate considerable dollars through the categorical formulas. I would just say that Representative Barrett's approach here is it's elegant in its simplicity. It's very straightforward. It comes through the front door of this problem as it relates to C. And it also echoes what was done, I think, as we talked about the work we did with the New Minnesota Miracle, looking at the basic formula and what does the basic formula need to be at, what level does that need to be at to ensure that children throughout the state are getting the kinds of educational opportunities that they need. We've also seen that it also echoes some of the things that the governor has talked about in his plan that was released last spring, talking about, again, bringing the top and the bottom closer together and looking at those districts at the low end of the funding spectrum and moving them upwards. Again, as we move forward, not only in this year but going forward, we certainly think that Representative Barrett has something that can be viewed as a template for how we... They're not happy with what I'm saying, I guess, but as a template... A template for how we want to approach this issue, and looking at, again, getting back to where the basic formula is the reflector of what educational opportunity needs, and a closer approximation of what that number needs to be to ensure equal opportunity for kids throughout the state. So with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Barrett, do you have any additional testifiers?
Mr. Chair, I do not. However, I do want to recognize Heidi Miller, business manager for Chisago Lakes School District. If there are any technical funding questions for especially the Chisago Lakes District, I'm sure Ms. Miller would be happy to come down and talk about that. But I do want to acknowledge her being here as well. And I'd be open it up to questions for anyone who might have any.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of the bill and move to member questions. Any questions for members of the committee? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Barrett, I noticed that you mentioned Pequot Lakes. That will be in my new district come 2013. I don't represent Pequot Lakes right now, though. We all represent everybody in the state of Minnesota.
Just if I could, just trying to plan ahead for you.
Thank you very much, Representative Barrett. I appreciate that. I'll get you to come and door knock with me. having said that, Representative Barrett, where's the money coming from for this?
Representative Barrett.
Sure. Well, I believe we are at the right place because I believe the folks here understand education financing and over time do allocate monies appropriately. So to directly answer your question, it would potentially come from new money. It could come from other monies as they become available at your discretion, being the Education Finance Board who recommends finance solutions for our state.
Representative Ward.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice tie.
Thank you.
Representative Barrett, so new money or new money is coming forward. So let's just say we don't have any new money. you know, what happens at that point.
Representative Barrett.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ward. Well, I come from the private sector. I don't have a lot of government experience. You know, I've never been a city council member. I've never been 16 years on the school board like some members of our esteemed body have. So when I look at decisions on money, I look at what is the most productive use of money. That's just how I do it. And so I look at the existing money, and I look at whether we have some that could become available or could become more productive by funding something this way rather than that way. Done that for 20 years. So to answer your question, there could be many sources within the current confines of our educational budget that we would look at and see, is this the most productive way to use that money, or is the way we describe a better way? So I would look through all that. I'm not on the Education Finance Committee. I would love to be maybe sometime in the future, because I might have some ideas on that, but that's not my current domain. I'm on education reform.
So,
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to see you back. Representative Barrett, then if that leads to my other question, that, you know, you said we would look at maybe current resources that we have to fund our schools, which we all have repeatedly said around here is not adequate. So if we have to look at current resources, could this in fact be a negative financial situation for school districts that do represent Brainerd and Crosby? Those, you know, could they positively be negatively impacted by this?
Representative
Barrett. Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, I'm not on the Education Finance Committee. That's a hypothetical. It would depend on the particular funding source you had in mind. I really can't answer that question with any level of accuracy.
And then,
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't see where Mr. Lundell went, but I was going to ask. I see Mr. Walseth in the. Oh, there he is. I see the back of Representative Reiner's head. I'm sorry. But you talked about it, and the superintendent from North Branch also talked about equitable funding structure. And I think that's what you know, Representative Greiling did with the Minnesota Miracle, and the people that put the Minnesota Miracle together over, you know, a lot of different groups, not just legislators, but a lot of different stakeholder groups that put that Minnesota Miracle bill together, which was providing adequate, stable, consistent, timely funding over, you know, a period of years, we hope. I mean, at that, and we know the price tag of that. But my concern is that, you know, we're looking for equitable funding structure for all of our school districts. And how does, so I'm interested, like, how rural Minnesota districts would feel about this. And also, Mr. Lundell, I know that you were very, very involved in the structure of the Minnesota Miracle. So is this kind of, you know, going against what the Minnesota Miracle has set up to be, you know, as far as getting rid of categoricals and kind of making a financial structure, you know, equitable for all students in the state of Minnesota?
Lundell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, I think this dovetails with the discussion of the new Minnesota Miracle. I don't think that it's contrary to it at all. The new Minnesota Miracle was based on a lot of new money being raised and then expended. The districts, and it's not going to go out on a, I mean, I don't think anybody in the new Minnesota Miracle thought that it was going out on a, you know, $1 for every kid in the state. There was going to be differential dollars spent. For the districts of C, we've got like three or four districts that are above the state average in terms of general education revenue. We've always viewed the new Minnesota Miracle as a way to narrow that gap between the high-generating districts and the low-generating districts in terms of state revenue and in terms of property taxes. We believe that if there's new revenue going in the system, the folks in North Branch, the folks in Chisago Lakes, Mora, Sartell, all those districts, Pequot Lakes isn't a member, I'm not going to send them a membership form after, you know, if this bill becomes law. But we're right now, as Superintendent Hinton pointed out, they're at crisis point in North Branch. They're on a four-day week. They have cut everything that they possibly can cut. As we move forward and look at reconfiguring the funding, the districts at the bottom are going to require special attention. And we believe what Representative Barrett is talking about here is one way of doing that, and he's going through the front door and doing it. Representative Greiling has talked about, and I agree with her, about the equity formula and all the dials and switches that are on that equity formula and how that formula is a mess. I would gladly give up that equity formula, and I think most districts would, if it, in its place we could get something that would bring up the bottom in a meaningful way. Someone's always going to be, there's 337 districts. Some district is always going to have to be 337. It's probably going to be a C district. I mean, I'll be flat out blunt about that. We don't generate much in terms of categoricals, and we're not going to be high users of referendum. But that district at 337, the resources that they get have to be sufficient to do what the state and federal government requires and what each child needs as they move into their future. Representative Barrett has come, I think, with a fresh approach to this. It's very straightforward, and we thank him for that because it looks at the districts at the bottom and seeks to move them up. You're right. Some districts are getting money here and some districts aren't. I would say from C, we've been watching other districts get money over the years when we haven't been getting money. So, I mean, and this is not about, oh, you know, now it's payback time. It's not that. We see a problem with districts, and I think that Superintendent Hannah has pointed that out. We're trying to, you know, close that gap. The governors came with some things last April with the referendum roll-in. It's another way of looking at this. There's a lot of good ideas out there, but at the end of the day, we want to see that gap between the top and bottom compressed.
Representative Barrett or Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just Mr. Lindell, so are all the C school districts on board with this? Do you have 100% consensus with this?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Lindell,
Representative Ward, I haven't polled them.
Okay. Representative Ward,
thank you.
Representative Reinhart, and then Anderson.
Mr. Chair Groppel,
Let's go to member questions here, and you can respond as accordingly. Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually hoping that Representative Greiling would speak first because she's far more knowledgeable than I am about this area. But what I don't understand, Representative Barrett, is that why we would try to remedy inequity without going to the intrinsic cause of the equity, and that is the current equity revenue formula. So, and you don't do that. You just let the formula stay as it is and try to bring the bottom up. So to me, we're just making permanent the problem instead of going to the source of the problem and trying to remedy it. That's part of my question. The second part of my question is the source of the money, because your bill doesn't say if there's new revenue. It says in the fiscal year 2014 and later, districts will be eligible for this revenue. So I would almost like staff to comment on what happens to, you know, our funding formula with this addition of disparity aid. So that's a two-part question.
So Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow, I believe the second part of that question was directed from Representative Breinert. And in the case of when we have a bill that increases appropriations, in this case $29 million a year, or in the previous legislative session that it was $5 billion over a biennium, what impact does that have on that without a revenue stream?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reinhart, this is part of general education, which is an open and standing appropriation. So if the bill were to pass, the appropriation for K-12 schools would go up by the $29 million per year as a part of the open and standing appropriation.
Representative Reinhart.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So where would that $29 million come from if it's not built into the...
Mr. Strom,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Reinhart. So $29 million more would come out of the general fund to pay for that. So essentially the fund balance of the state would go down by $29 million and per year, and the funding for schools would go up by $29
million. Representative Reinhart.
Well, so thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think it's important that we recognize with clarity that we're asking for other programs to be cut without designating where those cuts would come from.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a
question. Oh, hold on. Representative Reinhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was the second part of my question.
Oh, that's right. Can you restate the first part of your question for Representative Reinhart?
Yes, the first part of my question related to how we're permanently leaving the problem in place by not addressing the equity revenue formula.
Representative Barrett, not Reinhart, Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Reinhart. You bring up a good point. I'll give you an answer. It probably won't suffice. But again, I come from the private sector, and so what I'm looking for is exactly what Mr. Lindell said. I'm looking for a elegant, I've never used that word to describe myself, but thank you, and simple way to accomplish a goal. Whether that's the right way or the wrong way, that's for you all to decide. But for me, simplicity is best, especially when you look at what we have now, which is a long-standing, convoluted funding structure that gets changed and tweaked and pulled and pushed every year. And so this may add to that. I would grant those people who say it would, but to me it's the most elegant and simple way of accomplishing a goal, not just for the people in my district. This really recognizes a problem. You look at, I don't know how much detail you have been given. I think you have a sheet, a five-page sheet that shows each district. Surprised to see Sauk Rapids Rice on here that could get potentially $2.2 million more dollars. And that's an area up, I believe, by St. Cloud, good folks in St. Cloud. Other folks, North Ranch, 890, I represent them. Pequot Lakes, 799. I said that just because I wanted to see what members of the dish on the team here, who they represented. I was curious about that to see what the reaction might be. That's the only reason I pulled names with numbers I didn't know and I wanted to find out. Just the way I work, and so it's the simplest way to accomplish a really long-standing problem with education funding.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate the directness of your response, and what I'm going to say is in no way a reflection on the need of those districts that would benefit from this. But I don't think that a simple solution on a complex problem like the formula ends up being simple. I think we actually are going to compound the problem. And we've done, you know, we have small schools equity that's coming, small schools revenue that's coming into play. And we have all these minor fixes on the formula to address specific issues. And I think it doesn't resolve the issue. And the only real way to do it is to go back and revive the formula.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Representative Barrett, just curious how you came up with the 87%. You know, I like round numbers, 85 or 90. You have 87. How come?
Representative Barrett.
Well, that is a very good question. I prefer 100. That's a pretty round number to me. And let me tell you, if we went up from 87 to 100%, it would cost $358 million. And we're at 87. 90 is a good round number, too. That would cost 63 instead of the 30 we have now. So 87, you know, staff helped me with this, and it seemed like a number that wasn't out of the world. You know, it's not Viking Stadium level funding. It's really education funding level funding. So there's no secret, no science. I pulled numbers that are higher than that just because I wanted to see what the funding level would have to be. And $29 million is a lot of money, but it's not $358 million.
Representative Anderson?
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Well, I don't know where this is going. I like the idea, the concept, and if nothing else, it shows us we do have this wide disparity of education funding, and I thank you for pointing that out, and I like the idea.
Thank you.
Representative Ansells and then Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Barrett, I am really impressed with your private sector background, and if anything, we need more private sector philosophy and attitude with respect to how we educate youngsters in the public setting. Do you think it's fiscally responsible to do this while funding it from either drawing down the state's reserves or taking dollars from other portions of the K-12 budget, because it appears that those are the only two options that you have to fund this. And I do think there's some merit here. But as a private sector person, do you have trouble with either of those two options, and do you have another option?
Thank you,
Representative Barrett.
Mr. Chair, Representative, to answer directly your question, I think it's more fiscally responsible than what we are doing now. And I say that from this perspective. A lot of times we let the perfect get in the way of good, and I'm not even sure we're at good with our current funding formulas. So sometimes there are alternatives, and we don't do either one because it's not what we want. It's not perfect. And so I'm looking for a better way. That's my private sector background. That's what I want to accomplish. It's not political. You look at the districts on here, you have districts of both parties, and we all acknowledge that some districts are funded at a certain amount, and others, like North Branch and Chisago Lakes, who aren't near that level. And so, again, private sector background, looking at what we have now, trying to understand what could be better, and I think this is a better way.
Representative Anzels?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you for that, Representative Barrett. I was frankly looking for a little more specificity rather than lofty platitudes, because that's not going to cut it. Now, let me ask you one more question. Last year, during the 2011 session, this House had, at a minimum, five opportunities to raise revenue for public education. Did you support any of those opportunities?
Representative Barrett, before you answer that question, you should know that yesterday the committee did take up a Rukavina bill in which we transferred resources from one unit of government to our schools without raising revenue, and these objections did not take place. Yesterday it seemed to be okay. So, Representative Barrett, to the Anzels question.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I think that's... this bill was not there at the time, and I don't remember if I did or not, actually. I think this is a way to better fund our education for our kids, and it's a way that puts the money in the districts that need it the most.
Representative Barrett,
Representative Anzels,
you didn't vote to raise revenue one time.
Representative Peterson, and then Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett. First of all, is it the will of the chair or the author to lay this bill over?
That's correct.
Okay. Right. Well, I think the balancing question or the contention has been put out there by Representative Briner and others. Obviously, that's an important consideration for the committee. So I'll kind of keep my comments limited, except for the fact that this legislature, this majority, and the governor appropriated significant new resources to public education in the last session, and we took our opportunities to vote for those bills, and I'm proud of that.
Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Barrett, you do bring up a legitimate need here. And even though you weren't here before, Mr. Lundell, you know, I read the... what do you call them, blogs or web pages anyway, of the education groups, and there were many, many very nice ones advocating for the new Minnesota Miracle. But I think, if I'm, you know, probably arguably, but it was my opinion that Mr. Lundell wrote the best ones. So I think he's, you know, certainly, and C is certainly, has been a team player looking for comprehensive reform that would be fair for all kids. And since we haven't done that, now he's on to plan B or C or Z or whatever plan, because he is a creative person to come up with, to work with you and come up with this elegant bill here. But my problem with it is, though, I don't think it's terribly elegant, because it is just a finger in the dike for the districts that would benefit from this $29 million, and of course you know that. And so, you know, when there's not enough money, we all look to save ourselves, and in this case you know, you're saving some of the very poorest districts. So we say in other areas, if we don't have enough money for all the kids who need early childhood, go to the ones who are the poorest and fund those. And so you make a case for that. But it's more complicated than that, because as Mr. Lundell said, one of the reasons for some districts getting more money than others are the categoricals. You know, do you have kids that qualify for the categoricals? And if you don't, then you automatically aren't going to be getting as much money. If you don't have the poor kids, the special ed kids, the kids who don't speak English in as large of numbers. And so it's just a very complicated thing. And I think you're very smart to bring it forward right now, because hopefully next year, I'm beginning to wonder about this year, this committee will be looking at education finance reform again. You know, we had the Blue Ribbon Task Force that the governor and the commissioner had this year, last year, I guess, and we haven't heard that report. You know, one of the flaws that Chair Garofalo and I both point out about that one is that it sets things up to go back to property taxes rather than state funding. So, you know, I just have very mixed feelings, obviously, about this bill. But I think it puts the pressure on to discuss the whole comprehensive situation with the state of our schools, and the most poor schools that have to go to four-day weeks, I think, have to be the loudest singers in that choir to get something done. And it does involve, in my mind, having to raise some taxes in order to do it. Because when we owe our schools $2.4 for the two types of borrowings and $600 million for special ed prorations, you know, that's $3 billion. And then we have this long-term structural financial deficit. And then we have all the other budgets that, you know, are going to start wanting more money, and they're going to take it off the top before we pay back our schools. So there's just so many things to be discussed. And I hope all the legislators that want bills like this also will be willing to come up with some new revenue, because we obviously have failed with coming up with reforms that save this kind of money when we're still in huge debt. We need to look for those things, but it has to be a three-legged stool.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Barrett, for the bill. You know, I've been outspoken in the committee in the last legislative session about school funding and so forth, and I recognize that it's a very complicated process. And if nothing else, I think your bill brings further discussion to the topic of how do we go about funding our schools in an equitable manner. In the last session, we did a lot of good stuff. You know, we increased our spending by about $600 million for schools, and you know, I think that this is another tool in the chest, you might say. I'm not sure how this will proceed, but it's a great discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Barrett, closing comments? Sure. Oh, Representative Mariani, my apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be real brief, because Representative Grayling said a good chunk of what I've been struggling with as well, and she understands these formulas far better than I do. But, you know, as I was looking through the spreadsheet, I jumped out at me that, you know, two-thirds of this, and I'm not begrudging it, but I'm just, it's an important observation. You know, the $29 million, about $20 million is going to charter schools. And as I look through the charter school list, and I only did this very quickly, it seemed to me that the, you know, the Harvest Preps, the El Colegios, the Academia, Cesar Chavez, Concordia, over in Eastside, Hiawatha, is the schools that I know for sure have high concentrations of low-income kids, non-English-speaking kids, a good amount of special ed activity going on, are not going to be benefiting from this particular approach. And again, this is not a criticism, you know, similarly to what Representative Grayling put out about an attempt to address real issues that exist nonetheless. But I think it does point out that as philosophically sound as it may be to come up with elegant solutions, reality doesn't respond to elegant solutions. You know, reality is what it is. And reality is that we have issues like poverty in our state that's actually growing for young people, has been for several years. And we have a state formula that, in part, in terms of K-12 education, responds to that reality. We haven't regardless of what party, we haven't done those poor kids the best, met the best, the most responsible, given them the most responsible response on our part. But the effort is there, and it does, in fact, contribute to the uneven overall application of our general fund format. And so, again, all this really begs for is a truly comprehensive approach to these issues. And I get that the plan B or plan C is better than no plan at all, but ultimately, I fear, you know, a few years from now, we'll be back trying to figure out what the comprehensive response is, because that is what we need to do in order to provide equal, equitable access for all students in the state of Minnesota. So this will help, but I don't believe that we're solving the underlying issue before us.
Representative Barrett, Representative Dietrich, what we're going to do is I'm going to renew my motion to have this bill laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. But we will be meeting in this room at the completion of session. And so, Representative Barrett, if you could come back then so we can make sure we get Representative Dietrich's questions and any other questions from members of the committee. And at that time, you can give a closing statement. So thank you, Representative Barrett, as well as our testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loon. Representative Loon recommends moves that House File 2580 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And Representative Loon, do you have non-paid public testifiers here? Because we can take those first.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do.
Okay. So at this time, why don't we have your testifiers come down? And again, members at the hearing or at the at 2:15, we will recess to the call of the chair, and we will at the completion of the floor session, we'll be back in this same room. I'll make an announcement on the House floor. So, welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Randy Pranchinsky, and I'm here today to ask for your support for HF 2580. For the past 16 years, I've been a resident of Lakeville and extremely active in our schools. And right now, everyone's thinking, why is this guy here talking about this? They have great schools in Lakeville, don't they? And the answer is, yes, we do. But I'm also a former resident of Southern California, and I married into a family of teachers in the California school system. And I have seen firsthand how an underperforming school can negatively impact not just students, but the entire community. My wife and I lived in the California community where she grew up, went to school, and both of her parents were teachers. Her parents moved there because it was a nice city with great schools and a brand new high school. And that's funny because that's the same reason I moved here to Lakeville. As our California community changed and the schools started to fall behind, the bureaucracy of the system made it impossible for us parents to help. And even my in-laws who worked in the system said it was hopeless. When our children were born, my in-laws told us to ensure that we get them in a private school, as there is nothing we can do to save the schools from themselves. We were very active in the community and attempted to figure out a way to be able to help them. But we felt like we had no power, and after a while, we just gave up and put our sons in private school. The sad part of this is, all of this happened in the California school system in one small generation. So time is of the essence. I do not want to see our Lakeville schools or any other Minnesota school go down this same path or watch another community feel as if they have no voice. I can tell you that I already hear in our district, there's nothing we can do. The district just won't listen to us, and nothing's ever going to change. I've heard this before, and I watched the community go into shambles. As a parent, I can tell you there's nothing that hurts me more than to look at my children and tell them there's nothing I can do. Not all parents are as lucky as we were, and able to move to a new district or a new state in our case. I encourage you to give parents the opportunity to take a more active role in the education of their children by voting on this simple reform. As parents, we're willing to help to make our schools better, and all we're asking you is to give us the tools to make that happen. So please support HF 2580 and watch what we'll do for our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Hi. My name is John Carlson. I'm here as a member of Students First and as a parent of a school-aged child. And I'm here today to encourage you to pass House File 2580. This bill is not partisan. It's not a Democratic or a Republican idea. This bill simply makes it easier for parents of all political stripes to step in and help out when their schools need them the most. We all want our kids to get the best education possible. Should their local schools start to slide backwards, we simply ask that you allow parents to step in and help create a plan to attack the problem. We all want our kids to go to the best school districts possible, but we can't all afford to live in the state's best school districts. Students First advocates for a bill like this that would allow parents to take a more active role in the reform process when it becomes apparent that their local schools need a change. The intent of this bill is to make it easier for parents to get the best education that they can for their kids. This is a very simple principle at play here. As parents, if the school is providing a great education, we are happy. If they are not, many of us are happy to step up and help out. With a simple reform like this, the process would be in place to share the burden of returning a failing school between the administration and the parents. The only reason anyone would vote against this bill is if they truly believe that parents should not play an active role in the education of their children. And after listening to today's debate, it is clear that you all cherish quality education.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Ann Pritchett, and I'm a member of Students First. And I'm here today to encourage you to support the HF 2580. We often hear that it takes a village to raise a child. With this bill, you would be literally giving the village the tools it needs to help them to ensure that all children are able to receive the education that they deserve. When a school starts to lose ground, currently the hands of the parents are mostly tied. They can volunteer to help at the school, but what they really need is the ability to help the district identify why it's failing and set a course for improvement. As parents, we trust that the schools in the state will provide a quality education. If they're unable to do so, we want to be able to step in and make sure that the education they are providing is the best education possible. Last year, the state implemented a teacher evaluation process that will help identify areas where growth is possible. With this bill, you will allow parents to step up and help out the administrators who are struggling to keep their schools on a path to success. Everyone is getting by with less these days, and our schools are no different. As parents, we need to be able to step in and help the schools identify ways that they can improve their performance, to help ensure that our kids get the quality education that they need and deserve. I encourage you to give parents the opportunity to take a more active role in the education of their children by voting to support this simple reform. Politics should play no role in your decision. The kids are all that matters in this debate, and your vote to support this bill will show that you simply support better schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Loon, do you have any additional testifiers?
No.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify? Actually, Representative Loon, we should probably take up your amendments. Show me. Okay. First of all, are there any other non-paid members of the public who wish to testify here, people who are not paid to be here on this bill? Okay. So Representative Loon will we'll go to your amendments. And then, depending upon timing, either we'll take the paid testimony. I'm trying to think of a more polite word to say that than the hired testimony, either before or after the 2:50. So, Representative Loon, which amendment do you wish to move first?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess we could either offer them in numerical order or whichever. That's okay. Probably the easiest way to go about it.
Representative Loon moves the A1 amendment. And Representative Loon, did you wish to describe the amendments, or should I have Ms. Larson do that?
Actually, we could have Ms. Larson do it, and then I could just kind of walk through how it's altering the bill. Or if she's not comfortable, I'm happy doing it.
Yeah. Members, I think if you look in your packets under the 2792 bill, I think the amendments might have accidentally been put in the wrong folder. That was the case in mine. Is that the case with everyone else? So, Ms. Larson, are you now in a position to do that? Thank you. So, Representative Loon moves the A1 amendment. Ms. Larson, the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, the H2580A1 amendment
It amends on page 4, line 7. It changes as following. It changes the date from March to February so that if a board verifies petition signatures after February, then the intervention or other governance arrangement would not be implemented until the school year following the proximate school year. So it changes by 1 month the date by which the governance arrangement would be made effective the proximate year or the year following the proximate year.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Loon moves adoption of the A3 amendment. Ms. Larson on the A3 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the H2580A3 amendment, if you look on page 1, line 22, after the word arrangement, there is an explanation with respect to the concept of other governance arrangement. It means to allow an intervention strategy to improve students' educational outcomes and school performance.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The A3 amendment is adopted. And Representative Loon, are 4, 6, and 7, those are all yours? Just to be clear, I don't want to move an amendment on your behalf if that's not the case.
Yes, Mr. Chair, they are.
So Representative Loon moves the A4 amendment. Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, members, the H2580A4 amendment, it makes several changes throughout the bill. The concept that it's attempting to change is to make the measures consistent with the substance of the state's No Child Left Behind waiver, so that persistently lowest performing is not the measure anymore, but those schools that the department identifies as priority schools under the waiver for a minimum of 3 consecutive years. And that's the intent of the language that you see in the A4 amendment.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. A4 is adopted. Representative Loon moves adoption of the A6 amendment. Ms. Larson to that amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, the H2580A6 amendment, if you look at page 3, line 18, there's a description there of the petition process. Parents are the individuals authorized to sign. Representative Loon wanted to make sure that parents, including a natural or adoptive parent, a legal guardian, or other person who holds the right to make an educational decision on behalf of a student would be eligible to sign the petition, hence the definition of parent for purposes of this section.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. A6 is adopted, and Representative Loon, your final amendment, A7. Representative Loon moves the A7 amendment. Ms. Larson to that.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the H2580A7 amendment, there is a list of four intervention models that are permitted, including one that appears on page 2, clause 3. That particular school closure model would involve transferring students who are enrolled in a priority school to another school. And what you've got here is an attempt to better define what that other school would be. So rather than say another high-achieving school, the language is changed to say higher-achieving and then define what it means. And so on the amendment, lines 1.3 to 1.5 define higher-achieving, meaning performing above the 25% of lowest-performing schools as measured by the measures in the NCLB waiver for Minnesota.
Members, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The A7 amendment is adopted. Representative Loon, did you have any additional testimony before we went to member questions?
No, Mr. Chair, but if I could just make a couple of very brief comments.
Yes, Representative
Loon. Just to kind of put this in context, and I appreciate you allowing the witnesses to testify first who so they didn't have to wait and perhaps come back tonight. I do appreciate that consideration of their time. Members, we just went through a series of amendments, and, you know, we heard this bill in Education Reform Committee, and I took notes, and I think the committee process is good for a lot of things, but one is areas where your proposed legislation needs definitions, tightening up, making sure that the intent is clear. So I'm hoping that those amendments will do that in beefing up what I think is a terrific concept with the whole intent around providing some kind of a mechanism for greater parent involvement if their children are in a school that has been designated by the department as a priority school, again, one of our lowest performing schools in the state, and how they can meaningfully have a role in perhaps providing an intervention there to have education improve for their children. This is a very high hurdle for parents to meet in the petition process as set out in the bill and through the amendments. It has to be 51% of those parents, either with children in that school or in a school that would matriculate into that school. If the subject of the school is a middle school, if they're in the elementary school that would normally matriculate in that school, they would also be eligible. But it is a very high hurdle to get 51% or a majority of parents to agree on A, signing a petition, and B, what intervention they would specifically seek. I also wanted to note the attempt to work with the waiver that the department has recently obtained. And so the specific one of the amendments we did addresses that by indicating that when the department goes in to work with those schools, that it will identify as priority schools. They will work to create a turnaround plan and work with those schools. So a parent petition would not be eligible in those schools for at least 3 years. So we would allow 3 years for that process to work. And again, under what I believe is the department's plan or requirements for measuring success, if those schools do not come up to being above the 25% lowest schools, then the parent petition option would be available to parents if they chose it. And again, I think it would be important to point out, and you'll hear from other testifiers who may disagree with this, but it gives an opportunity also for the school board to be continually working with those parents through this turnaround model, whether it's the parent petition or the one that precedes it that the department works on, that they are listening to parents, that they are working with the parents in the community to do their best to have these intervention models take seed and really provide success for children. So with that, I'd be happy to have other testifiers address the bill and then answer questions.
All right, so this is a public hearing, so now we'll move to the, what's the polite way to say the paid testimony, the hired testimony that's here to speak on behalf?
Other testifiers.
If you have any comments, this is the portion. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And I will, I'll work on trying to come up with a term that doesn't sound quite as offensive as paid testimony. No. Professional testimony. There we go. Professional testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Associations. This morning, the chair said anyone who has any credible testimony that they'd like to offer, that cut the field out of this.
I like that one better.
Mr. Chair, members, and we, frankly, I want to say we really appreciate working with Representative Loon on a lot of issues. And I say that in preface to being critical of the bill because we really do appreciate working with her, and she's a very open legislator to talk about these issues. As school principals, we have some concern about the tool that's here. We've talked a lot about what the goal is. We've said these same things in the policy committee. You know, the message is that you want us to improve poor-performing schools and that you should look at parental involvement in doing that. And parental involvement is certainly a good thing. This is a voting trigger that sets in place very rigid reforms. When these were triggered by the federal government with the low-performing grants, we had several schools where the parents wanted to save their principals, but they couldn't because the federal law was so rigid. You need some flexibility in here. This model says that 51% of the parents, and the parents, let me say, this is by petition. This isn't at a meeting where you talk about this and vet these issues and talk about the consequences. This is getting someone to sign a petition And that petition will trigger one of these four models. Those models include closing the school. One of them, if you look at the model, talks about that we would fire the principal and all of the teachers. Where do they go? It says we'll hire new teachers at the site. Now, currently, when a district does that, they have to work through all of the issues that are connected to that. This bill doesn't reach into any of that. It really sets a petition-driven mandate. And we think that is just too heavy-handed. There would be a lot of other alternatives if you said parents would have involvement with their boards, that boards had to meet with parents to talk about alternatives in poorly performing schools, and that boards should make the decisions and the elected officials make the decisions. But we just think that this particular model, the practicality of it, is too rigid for what you're looking at doing here, and that the trigger would trigger some things that may very well not work or be in the interests of that school. Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I work for the Minnesota School Boards Association. I'm a school board member, so my folks are home working, and I'm here to do the best I can to advocate on their behalf. I want to thank Representative Loon. She has been a fantastic author and has worked really closely, and it certainly has been open to our concerns on this bill going forward. Roger sort of gave you the overview. I'd like to sort of give you some of the nuts and bolts issues. First of all, there's a 51% trigger on parents or parents who can matriculate into the school. Schools have lots of different formations around the state of Minnesota. In Albert Lea, the district where I was from, there are four elementaries that matriculate, as well as private and parochial schools in our community that matriculate into our senior high and our middle school because they don't provide programs farther than the elementary. It's defining how many votes you need to get 51% of is difficult. And when you say matriculating in, then are we willing to give that data to a parent petition group with everybody's name? How will they know if the name applies to the petition or not? I mean, there's got to be some data release here, and I'm concerned about that from a school level. There's a election component, and I like to talk about it as the parent piece. Can I suggest that there already are election procedures across the state of Minnesota that might fit this model better? And it would have using a voter list, it would have a first-class notification to taxpayers in the district, it talks about petitions, it investigates election fraud, and that's all done through the county auditor's office. That's not done through the school districts. But this bill would require us to take on all those auspices going forward. We have in this bill, it talks about one parent voting only for one child. I brought this up in the policy committee. I have three children. So would that mean that either my husband or I get to vote twice on the petition? Could I sign my name twice, or do I only sign my name once? And I think you've got to work through that nuts and bolts issue. Lastly, in the end, so after we get to a transformational process and 51% of the parents have participated, we know all those things, let's just get past that. What is the accountability and transparency for these schools going on? Would they be able to be using a 51% process to change what they have, or are they sort of stuck? And last but not least, we have concerns about building debt, referendums, and how that would be applied to these new startup entities. So basically, within 6 months, that school would close. Well, what if that goes unoccupied and there's building debt associated with it? How would referendum go if, in fact, that was a school to, you know, either receive or just receive updated technology? I mean, all these things are more than a six-month process and something boards do over the long haul with their voters. So I really encourage you to consider a taxpayer notification about how this would impact referendums and what would go unpaid and who would pay it going forward. It's just a very difficult process to insert into Minnesota's present election structure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any additional members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, Jim Graffball, Minneapolis Public Schools. I do want to thank the author for bringing the bill forward, working on and working with members of the professional lobbying community on concerns about the bill. The concern we have is we've been working on our 6 school improvement grant schools. We'll probably be working on additional schools. In Minneapolis, we've closed schools. We've fresh started schools. We've contracted with others to run schools. We've brought charter schools to operate within our schools. So we've had a forward-leaning board, a forward-leading superintendent in implementing reform models. What we have found is we work very hard on parent engagement. And as I said to Representative Bloom a number of times, it's practically a joke. How many public meetings do you have to get your parents to agree to close a public school? The answer, that's not even funny. I mean, there's no number of public meetings or parent engagement you can do. So our interest in this, as this bill moves forward, is to make sure that this doesn't become a tool for parents to prevent a forward-leaning administration and school board from implementing the reform models that we're concerned about. I think the language, the last section of the bill, on line 417, a school board's not required to implement the intervention or other governance arrangement requested by parents in a petition. Petition if the request is inconsistent with this section. I think the intent of the author there is to make sure that the school boards, if the school board and administration are proposing reforms, that the educational professionals have something to say about driving where that reform intervention goes. If the parents petition one thing and the administration recommendation is the other, we would prefer that the administration recommendation is the way we go. And I appreciate the movement on kind of the implementing the turnaround model. That is, if I haven't quite engrossed all these amendments in my mind, but I understand from what we just discussed, adopting these 6 amendments, that we've moved back, if it's a petition submitted by February, that the turnaround takes place not in the proximate but in the following academic year. It's still a very short timeline for us. I don't know that we can put together a turnaround model that quickly. We don't, in the previous committee, I said we don't have an easy bake oven to turn to and have a turnaround model in about an hour. Putting together a new school plan takes time planning, and we'd appreciate the opportunity to continue to work with the author on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any additional public testimony? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Darren Cordy. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education. I do want to thank Representative Loon for all of her hard work on this bill. It's a very difficult bill, as you all know, and it's a lot of different competing interests, and she's done about as good a job as one can do on this bill. We definitely appreciate a lot of the clarifications that were done through the amendments. I think that does clean up the bill quite a bit. Since this is the Finance Committee, in the interest of time, I'll keep my comments to the fiscal portion of our concerns. So what this bill would essentially do, if it became law, would be taking out the... So what this does is... currently takes out the SIG language and clarifies what schools we're talking about, the priority schools. And we think that was a very helpful amendment. But ultimately, it would be a state statute which is directing MDE to turn around schools based upon this parent trigger. But however, we'd be using federal dollars, and we aren't allowed to do that under the current structure. We're allowed to turn around schools under the waiver and around the SIG program. We don't have any state staff in that division. They're all federally funded staff. I do have Steve Dibb here, who is our director of school support programs, if we'd like to delve into this a little further. But we do believe that conducting turnarounds that were required under this statute would require some state funding in order for us to implement those turnarounds.
Thank you. Are there any additional members of the public who wish to testify? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of this bill and move to member questions. Any questions from members of the committee? And members, just to be clear, the motion, Representative Loon modifies her motion to have this referred to the Ways and Means Committee. We received a fiscal note on that. And even though the implementation date would be outside of this biennium because of the 3-year term of the NCLB waiver, still, that my guess is the Ways and Means Committee will want to see this. If I'm mistaken in that interpretation, we'll find out about that later. But member questions. Representative Mariani, and then Representative Briner.
Mr. Chair, I have a lot of questions, but I'm not going to ask them. I thought the most recent testifiers raised some of the concerns that I'm concerned with. And, you know, one of the things that I think we struggle with in this legislature for several years through different administrations is how do we make decisions based on sound research and evidence. And frankly, even with the turnaround models that the Obama administration, Arne Duncan, has posited forward on Race to the Top, I'm not convinced that there's sound research to support a number of those. And we're about to take a real big bite in the apple here, just sort of based on assuming that any of these models are going to be effective. We're new in this era. And for us to implement those into state statute, I think is a very premature step. I do like the bill's intent of empowering parents. I think that's a positive movement. I do think there are perhaps more prudent ways in which to do that now. But since this is Finance Committee, I just want to ask the author a question, and perhaps this is one, just one to think about. You know, depending on where, you know, what happens with this bill, but. So if I understand the scenario here, you have parents who will ultimately drive a compelling decision on the part of a local elected school board that have all sorts of implications, particular implications about how they would use locally derived revenues. And but yet, those parents don't necessarily need to live in the district. You know, we have open enrollment, you know, all that. But you do have parents that live in a district who voted for that school board, who then acting presumably in the best interests of those local residents have structured schools in the current way. And so I see some issues here in terms of accountability, you know, back to the local public related to local resources. And again, we don't need to dig deep into this, but I would, among other things, I would urge you to think about that. And we didn't hear that issue come forward, but I can see all sorts of possible scenarios in the future where, you know, local parents who live in a particular school district can wind up with huge battles and handicapped in those battles against parents who don't live in the district, but nonetheless would have this kind of power to restructure their local schools because they send their kids there. And so you have two good groups of people, you know, potentially over, you know, having a big fight and debate here. And I think we need to be careful as a legislature in terms of authorizing you know, that kind of power relative to local resources, and to think carefully about that.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Mariani. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, I'd like to ask you, first of all, I want to say that I, too, appreciate the broad idea of parental empowerment here. But did you look at any other models of how to empower parents to be involved that didn't involve these four federal definitions?
Representative Loon, did you have a bill on that yesterday? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Briner. I appreciate the question. You know, I've looked at a number of other things that we could incorporate in here, and, you know, again, I think, you know, we could continue to add other models into it. You know, my fear is the more things we add into it, then it still becomes a finite list no matter what we do. And it is, to be honest with you, it's one of those concept bills that I think is terrific. It's writing the details of it into law that become extremely cumbersome because, again, I had several amendments to my own bill and a delete all amendment in the last committee just trying to address all of those things. And so I think still maybe a couple of things we could tweak to work on that. But, you know, I think, again, this the whole notion of parent empowerment and around the original concept of No Child Left Behind is the idea that at some point we get serious about doing things very differently in schools that are failing, have been failing for a long time, and are continuing to fail children. And I applaud and support the notion of research-based interventions and that, but clearly schools that are not showing improvement to move out of the very bottom from priority schools and that, whatever's happening there, whether it's research or not, is not working. So, you know, I'm hoping this is a lever, if you will, and trying to be mindful of the waiver and, again, this process of really garnering all forces from Department of Education to the individual schools and that to work on something and the parents, but that at some point, if the results are not bringing up academic performance for those students, that the parents have some kind of a lever and a mechanism to say we need to make more aggressive changes to get some results for our kids.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate your response. I would just second what Representative Mariani insinuated here, and that's taking on these four definitions of what a turnaround model ought to look like that are defined in federal law is terribly problematic. And I would encourage you to consider starting a stakeholder group with the range of experts we have in our own state from our own research communities to examine turnaround models and weigh the strengths and weaknesses of these federal definitions before we actually commit ourselves as a state to that limited description.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a statement in support of this bill, and Representative Loon mentioned a couple of the things that I wanted to say, and I carried a bill similar to this, and she has improved it dramatically since last session. But one thing that has always struck me under No Child Left Behind is that a school could literally be failing its students for five consecutive years before any real fundamental and substantial change could occur. And even in this bill, a school can literally be failing its kids for 3 years in a row before the parents would be empowered to intervene. And so I don't find this any kind of radical departure. Frankly, I'm shocked that we haven't moved stronger in this direction previously. And I think some of the comments about the turnaround models probably are valid, but we've been talking about turnaround models for years. I was on the Race to the Top grant application committee 2 years ago, I guess, and you know, we were in extremely large groups, stakeholder groups, talking about turnaround models and what might work. And you know, these are the ones that are embraced by the Obama administration and Secretary Duncan, and they have been used successfully in other cities. So I think it's beyond time for us to embrace this concept. Representative Loon has done a great job bringing the stakeholders together to improve this thing and fine-tune it so that from a process standpoint it's as solid as possible. But holy cow, members, 3 straight years in a row a school can fail its kids before the parents have any real opportunity to change it. So it's a great step in the right direction, and for some of us, maybe it's not even as big a one as we would like. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loon, any closing comments?
Thanks to the committee and to you, Mr. Chair, for a good discussion. Again, I think on what I hope is at least a concept, if you can't support it, gives you pause for thought about what do we have in our statutes. We have lots of protections and things to govern all kinds of issues and practices as it pertains to our schools, but I looked and I couldn't find any specific statute in there that says here's how parents can specifically come in and request a change, a specific change in their school for the betterment of their children. So this does that, and I think it's provides them a voice in a very organized way. We have unions for teachers and principals and others to advocate for their policies. Let's give parents at least some mechanism for gathering and collectively providing a strong suggestion and desire for intervention and change. I think the hurdles in here are very high. We have very much narrowed the scope for which schools would have this option. We've allowed time for intervention and turnaround to occur before this process would take place. So, again, I think there's some pretty good protections in here. to say we're not just going to overnight come in and start trying to close schools or convert to charters or fire principals, but it certainly would be a strong message that if you're one of those priority schools, we better get serious, everybody, about making some improvements, or the parents may have the ability to come in and narrow those options in the future. So with that, I thank the committee and hope you find your way to perhaps support this.
Representative Loon renews her motion of House File 2580 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
Motion prevails. The Loon motion is successful. Thank you. Representative Depke, come on down. The chair moves House File 2792 for possible inclusion in a later bill. And Representative Depke, I see no amendments to your bill, and my understanding is that you have real members of the public to testify as well.
Oh, I do.
Representative Depke, we are under a time crunch, though, so we'll ask of you and the testifiers to please be brief in your testimony.
Yep, as much as possible. We're very much aware. We appreciate you allowing us. I do have some outside testifiers. This bill is a Wayzata lease levy bill. It does not have a fiscal note. It's actually a savings to the district, and what it essentially does is it allows Wayzata to expand the authority on the lease levy. And I do have the director of finance with me and the chair of the Wayzata School Board to quickly testify. And I think what I'll do is I'll have the chair go first, and then we'll is that all right?
That's fine.
Okay, good. Mr. John Morose, go ahead, John.
Mr. Chair, welcome. Thank you for the opportunity. I just am here in support of this bill. I would urge the committee to help our school district. We have been very fiscally responsible, and we ask your support with this bill. Thank you.
And, sir, if you could please state your name for the record so we know who you are.
Yes, sorry. My name is John Morose.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Jim Westrom. I'm the Executive Director of Finance and Business. And, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to address you this afternoon and for the important work you do for school districts and for the state of Minnesota. We're pleased that Representative Depke could introduce this bill. And really what it allows us to do is to have additional flexibility. Currently, the Wayzata School District has grown over 1,000 resident students in the last 7 years, and we haven't added any additional space during that period of time. We're now at a point where we need to find instructional space for our students. And even this year, we have 4 classrooms that we need to locate within our district. During that process, we've looked at various opportunities to rent space within the community, and we do already have authority to lease instructional space. But within our district, we also have spaces within our district that could serve to educate these students. And so what we're asking for is the ability to move adults instead of to move students. It would actually be less costly to do that, and over a extended period of time, it would provide a significant savings, as you see in your spreadsheet that we passed around.
Yeah, the assistant is passing out the spreadsheet, and you can see on that. And we'll have Mr. Westrom go through that just real quickly for you to show you that over a period of several years, we are saving about $250,000 for the school district without raising the levy at one penny. Go ahead.
Yep. So once again, because this is a finance committee, there's zero state impact on the state aid. There's a $0 impact on our local property taxes. And in addition, it would actually increase our efficiencies and allow us to continue to keep approximately $266,000, which you see over to the right of the spreadsheet as total cost savings. As you know, when you educate students, they need to have access to certain core facilities, media centers, gymnasiums, cafeterias, and then also their supervision. And so the primary operating costs that we will be saving by locating these students within our existing campuses and moving the adults that are administering different programs within our district off campus. So with that, for your consideration.
And the additional savings also on this particular bill is money is saved. There will not be the need for busing students to an off-site space. In addition to that, administrative oversight on an off-site location. It's a common sense solution to a problem that Wayzata has, as you know, due to the significant shift in the West Metro area, as we've all experienced lately. This is where the growth is coming from, and I think this is a good common sense way to solve the solution.
Thanks, Representative. Are there questions from the public or members? If not, this bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 2792, laid over. Any final comments, Representative Dipke?
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity for having to let us testify today again. The levy impact is zero, the state impact is zero, and the total savings would be more than $250,000 for our district, and we'd appreciate your consideration of including this in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Representative. And again, House File 2792 is being laid over for possible inclusion. With that, members, we will be recessing to the call of the chair, so stay tuned to hear when that would be on the floor today. So we are recessing to the call of the chair.
Yeah. Members, we still have quorum from our previous meeting, and so we have the bonding recommendations that were voted on by the committee. Those are in front of us, so we'll move those. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Bonding recommendations are adopted. And this and John said it was okay. Are you fine with this?
I want to get on the road. I don't
care. Just the vote. So
I'm glad you included Red Lake.
Okay. So yeah. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.